School of the Master, Lecture 5, A Master Leaves the Human. School of the Master, Lecture 5, A Master Leaves the Human. A master leaves the human and lives in his ideal nature with no regard for being healthy, wealthy, trusting relationships or happiness through bliss, always enjoying life in the allness now. If a master were to live like a human being, he would fail miserably in being a master. Because being a human being, you're always after something. You're always after fulfilling your health, your wealth, your relationships, your happiness. You're always trying to fulfill them. And because you're always trying to fulfill them, they are never fulfilled. A master never thinks about being human, but a human always thinks about being a human. A human wants to do these things. Now you say, I'm only human. I'm only human as an excuse for not being the very best you can. But a human can do lovely things too. We find that students in the school of the master are and are not seeking or wishing they were. Students in the school of the master are, and they are not seeking or wishing they were. It's so easy to forget that we are all things. From the very beginning, we were created as the masters of ourselves. We are created as the divine beings. We were created as the fulfillment of everything that is. And then we promptly forget it. We promptly forget it because to be a master and to be that, we don't need to be a human. But we're always training ourselves to be human. We're always training ourselves to be sensitive to our human bodies. We're always training ourselves to be needing health. We see other people around us living in improper relationships to themselves, and they lack health. And we wonder, why do they lack health? They have such nice-looking bodies. They have a lot of food to eat. They have a lot of liquids to drink. They have a lot of things to do. But why aren't they healthy? And then we come to the solution. They are not healthy because they think they are not healthy. What does the doctor ask you when you go into his office? What's the first thing he asks you? What sort of a health history do you have? What sort of history do you have of your family, your mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and cousins and grandparents? What sort of health did they have? Did any of them have nervous breakdowns? Did any of them have mental problems? Did any of them have health problems of any kind? And they, if you can't think of them, they have a list of at least 50 or 60 major health problems. And then they ask you, now, are there any other health problems that you have that they haven't got listed there? And so you're supposed to think of these things and remember them. Well, it's a foredrawn conclusion that every time you act like a human, you're going to have problems. Because you're going to remember that people in your family have problems and they have health problems. That's just one area now. How are you going to work with these health problems? How are you going to handle them for yourself? How are you going to handle them in your life? Are you going to say, these are things that I am, and I'm really not a master. I'm really not the ideal person. I'm a person who has health problems. Just look at my family, and just look at me. Did you have the mumps and the measles and chicken pox? Did you have all these wonderful things? Well, when we were children, not more than 50 to 100 years ago, when we were children, they didn't have half of the problems that they have now. They have problems now that they had never dreamed of way back when. And they didn't have these problems way back when because we're told the food was healthier to eat, the air was healthier to breathe, the water was healthier to drink, and who has polluted the nest? Who has polluted the water, the food? Who has polluted the air? We have. And we say, well, let's have a little less cars going around. And yet every person wants to own their own car and wants to drive their own car and wants to be in their own car and wants to take their own car to go two blocks to the store and back home again. They want to drive to work, not with another person, because they might want to go out after work. They do that maybe once a month. They want to do something with their car. They want to have it, and the air pollution just gets more interesting and more interesting. Now, what happened when people lived near volcanoes? What happened when people lived near polluted areas where fires had gutted out the trees and everything was pretty miserable? What happened? The people just breathed normally, and the people were not disturbed by these things at all. They built up a resistance to them, and they were not touched by them. But because the doctors tell us that we are touched by them, because the doctors tell us that we are destroyed by them, well, we believe that we are. And we really believe it. And we really believe it because we experience this. We feel that we're breathing more difficult. We are doing things more in harmony to ourselves. Why are we doing that? Well, we are doing that because we want to be human. We want to be humans who have to work for their wealth and have to work for trusting relationships and have to work for happiness and bliss. We want to work on this. We want to study on this. We want to train ourselves on this. We want to do it because we like being called human. Now, if I were to say to a group of people, we're having a class in being a master, and in this class, you're learning how to handle all of the circumstances of your life in a harmonious way. You're learning how to have perfect air. You're learning how to have perfect food. You're learning how to have perfect health and more. And then I have another class, and this class is in hypnosis, how to hypnotize yourself to accomplish great things and how to do wonderful projects in controlling and manipulating the world and how to do all these things. And what's the course that has the most students taking it? The course in hypnosis. What's the course that has the most students taking the courses in a college? Well, the course is about human relations, about how you get along with other human beings and how you learn about writing short stories and how you learn about doing things. The real teaching that schools could do if they wanted to would be to teach you how to be the ideal human being or the ideal divine being. But that's a little much to hope for. So let's just hope for the ideal human being. Now, what is the ideal human being? The ideal human being is not how to get a job, not how to live in a healthy body, not how to do these things, but it's just how to have fun and be yourself in all ways. Be yourself and have fun. My goodness. Now, people don't take those courses because they don't believe that's true. And they don't believe that's true because they believe that to be human is what it's all about. To be human is what is important for all of us to do. Students in the School of the Master are. They already exist in their mastership. They already exist in their allness. They're not seeking or wishing that they were that which they want to be. They know that they are that right now. Each master apprentice of the School of the Master lives fulfilled in every area, complete now. Can you do that? Can you, as a master apprentice in the School of the Master, realize that in every area you are complete now? I've given these courses in the School of the Master for quite a number of years, and every time I give the course, many students attend the course. And they attend the course, and they attend the course in very primitive conditions where they have very few distractions. And because they have very few distractions, they don't realize what's going on. And some of them carry out the program of the School of the Master in very definite way, in very beautiful way, in very positive way. And these people accomplish a great deal. And these people do something very strange. Those who live as an apprentice in the School of the Master, in all humility, in all gentleness, these people cease to be human. They cease to live in a human-related world, and they live as a master. They live fulfilled in every way. They live beautiful in every way. And what they do is they disappear. They disappear from the human fold. And as they disappear from the human fold, the people who were with them don't even know that they were with them. The people who took the course with them don't even recognize that these people sort of disappear. They elevate, levitate. They manifest themselves in a different way. And it happens. But now, those people who have attended these courses and who remember each other, they said, oh no, nobody else was there. Nobody else was in our course with us. It was just those people that were here and one or two that didn't quite make it. And yet they did. They really did make it, and they really did find out how to do it very beautifully and very wonderfully. Now, things human and physical are lovely for human-oriented beings. As Jesus, the Buddha, and other spiritual masters, I am truly interested in living on the inner path of introspection and unconditional love. But how do I live on the path of introspection and unconditional love? We listen to the words that are supposed to have come out of the Buddha's mouth and come out of Jesus' mouth and other religious leaders. And we think those things are something quite magnificent. We think those things are quite beautiful. And yet, every other word contradicts the other word. One moment they're saying, you are perfect, be perfect even as is your Father which art in heaven, which is the divine within you. And the other is, he died for our sins. He died for our problems. And we have no choice, no possibility to rise above that. And on and on and on. And I find it most amusing, one story that was told about Lazarus. And Lazarus died. And Jesus went to him and rose him from the dead. And Jesus said to Lazarus' sisters, hey, there's no problem there. He only sleeps. He's only sleeping. And yet the story comes down to us that Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead, because to all appearances, Lazarus was dead. But did Jesus really raise him from the dead, or did Jesus merely recognize that he was sleeping and call him forth out of that sleep? Did he do that to others? Yes. Did he say that all of us should be able to do that? Now, what did he mean by that? Well, what he meant was, we don't need to die. We don't need to die any more than we don't need to sleep. We sleep because that is something human, and we built it into our consciousness. Our body is pure energy. It's 100% atoms. And 100% atoms that are more energy in one teensy-weensy little atom than in that would light a city for almost a year, 2 years. Atom, one atom that would light a city with thousands of people in it, maybe millions of people in it. How can that be? Why would the human body need energy? Why would the human body need to have food, water? Why would it need to have air? Why would it need these things? Because we have taught ourselves that we need it. Can we take an atom out of our fingertip, for instance, and then ingest that atom and have that atom give us energy? What would happen to us? Well, we'd blow ourselves up. We would become totally incapable of doing anything. We'd be dead. Why is it then that we have that power and we can't use it? Well, we have that power and we can use it, but we need to know how to use it. Are we going to use it as a human being, or are we going to use it as a divine being? Are we going to use it as a human being with limited use of it, just burning it up? Or are we going to use it as a divine being and using that energy on continual movement, on continual energy, on continual use? That energy is eternal. It does not wear out. It does not die. They say atoms can neither be created nor destroyed, and yet we break an atom in two to make certain an atomic bomb. But why are we really doing that? Are we really doing that, or are we appearing to do that? Have we just taken the tiny substance we think is an atom and break it up, whereas the atom itself is much tinier than anything we can imagine, and we never break it up. You can be sure of that. This atom that our divine being uses to create itself and to enjoy itself and to live in its world is absolutely magnificent. It's absolutely powerful. It's immortal. It lives forever. It's fantastic. Now, do you have the ability to use that atom? As Jesus and the Buddha and other spiritual masters, they're not interested in the human path. They're interested in the divine path. The human physical path is totally unimportant to them. And they transcend that every time. The School of the Master shares with us the ideas of the spiritual masters. And the Course wants neither health, relationships, riches, nor spiritual mastership. The Course, the training, the trial, includes the fulfillment of each Jesus and Buddha, our masters. What is this? They are not on the humanness path. What constitutes the humanness path? A human is defined as imperfect. Is that what you want to call yourself? A human is considered mortal. They die. They leave this mortal world. A human is incomplete. And are we the ideal? Are we really complete? Or are we really incomplete? A human is a work in progress. It is something that is developing. It is growing from child to manhood. A human is searching for life's meaning and purpose, as though we don't already know it. A human is not divine. A human is aware it flows from dimension to dimension, never arriving at the state of divinity so devoutly to be wished. Why do we do things like that? Why do we go in directions like that? Why are we walking such a path where we are limited, where we are not going to achieve? A master leaves the human. He absolutely leaves the human behind. And he leaves the human behind not by saying that it is bad, but by saying the divine is very good. The state of being divine is the pure state of awareness of who and what we are. Now, how do we arrive at who and what we are? The School of the Master could not dwell on being human in the finest manner. It could not dwell that way. Only human schools do that. Only schools that people go to with their human attitudes. Only when they go to their churches and they go to their synagogues and they go to their organizations where they teach them how to manipulate mankind and how to manipulate the world and how to control life and how to control everything in their world. A master looks at things differently. The School of the Master dwells on being divine, complete, whole, now. How can you be divine, complete, whole, now? Because that's what we are. Our original purity and integrity is that we are complete and whole and divine now. Our original purity and integrity is that we are beautiful, that we are fantastic, that we are glorious, that we are wonderful, that we are all things right now, and it is beautiful, and it is good. It is wonderful. We are utterly amazing, and we have a little music on here. It's really not any fun being a human being, because we're always trying to improve, we're always trying to grow, and we're always trying to have something better come our way. But the school of the Master dwells on being divine, complete and whole now. Be yourself and have fun. Now, how can we be ourselves and have fun? How can we enjoy life? Why are we here? Are we here to have some great and glorious activity take place in our life? Are we here to have some magnificent experience take place for us? Are we here to understand why we're here? Why are we here? Can you imagine why you might think you're here? Can you imagine you're here to be God? You're here to be the creator of the universe. You're here to create and be the creator, and you're here to create all the experiences you're having. You're here for all of these neat and wonderful things. Well, what's that all about? What does that really mean? What does that mean? Does that mean something magical, something mystical, something outstanding? Well, let's just look at this on an honest basis. We are human beings at the moment. We are human that we intend to leave beside. Everything teaches us that we go beyond the limitations of the human being. Everything teaches that to us because that's where we are. Now, where are we going? Where are we going? Well, let's say we're going to the divine. Now, what's going to happen to us as we go to the divine? Well, as we are a human being, we have all the trials and misfortunes that life can bring to us. We are limited in our body. Our body can be shot. Our body can be hurt. Our body can be damaged. Our body can be ill. In the divine, no so. In the divine, we are untouched. We are untouched by any human malady. We're untouched by any human experience. We're untouched. What does it mean to be untouched? Does it mean that we are touched with our fingers? Does it mean we're touched with our emotions? Does it mean that we're touched with having these experiences sort of overwhelm us and manipulate us so that we cannot walk, we cannot talk, we cannot think, we cannot act? Well, yes. Being touched means all those things. And being untouched means those things do not exist for us. Those things do not exist in our world where we are in a condition where we have to be touched by the weather, be touched by food, be touched by a substance, be touched by the outer in any way. Now, I will ask you this question, and your answer has to be no, but how many of you have ever met a person, a human being that is alive? How many of you ever met a human being who was absolutely untouched, who lived as an ideal being, who was the ideal human being? Did you ever meet an ideal human being? Even an ideal human being? No. You've never met an ideal human being because no one has spelled out for you what it means to be an ideal human being. An ideal human being is one who is verging on the divine. Everything is, you see, when you're divine, the human world does not exist for you. But when you're human, you can be divinely human. You can be totally unaware of your human life. Now, why is it you can take a hammer and hit one finger, and then that hurts so bad, and then you drop the box of nails on your other finger, and it hurts the other finger, and you forget about the first finger you hit the hammer with? How can you transfer your pain threshold from one point to another? We do it all the time. We transfer the pain threshold by how we act, how we think, how we live, what we do. When you are so thrilled with living your life and doing whatever things please you and delight you, you don't even think about eating. A painter oftentimes forgets to go and eat. He forgets to go to the bathroom. He forgets to do everything because he is so engrossed in his artistic direction for himself. An author, the same way, many times. We hear the story of Daniel in the lion's den and how Daniel was confronted with these lions and they were going to eat him up. And they were hungry lions because they hadn't been fed. And what did Daniel do? Daniel was always master of every circumstance he was in. He shouldn't have created himself in that circumstance, but it made a good story. So he creates himself in that circumstance, and when he gets in it, he said, "Well, guys, you can eat me, or I can tell you the story of my life. And if I tell you the story of my life, maybe you'll understand some of the problems I'm going through and offer me some advice." And pretty soon, after he touched the female lions and the baby lions, the big daddy lions came up. They wanted to be touched too. And before you know it, he was talking to them and sharing with them just as though they understood exactly what he was saying. Did they understand? You bet they did. They understood because he was not being human. He was not being human in any sense of the word. And he wasn't being inhuman either, but he's not being human. He was divine. He was living in the attitude that he could talk to these animals and they could understand him. Now, what's so stupid about that? What's so stupid about that? I talk to my dog all the time. People talk to their animals all the time. I'm walking the path and I say, "Rex, come walk with me now, quietly, inside myself." I don't say it out loud. And then a second later, here he is walking up to me. He wasn't behind me. He wasn't on either side of me. I had looked before. And so I just said, "Okay, Rex, come walk with me now." And he walks right up there. And he walks close enough so that my fingers hanging down will rub his back as he walks by so that I will know he's there, you know, because he knows what he's doing. He knows. You can talk to animals. People put their heads inside of a bear's mouth. And Charlie Meyer sent us a group of pictures, and one of them is this woman. The big lion has its paws through the cage on her shoulders, and she's snuggling the lion's mouth, you know. Mm-hmm. And another one, there's a giant tiger, which is 1.5 times as tall as the man. And the tiger is just cuddling the man in its arms, and the man is cuddling the tiger. Now, did the man have to teach that to the tiger? Or was the man so in tune with himself, with his divine self, with his gentle self, that the tiger understood? There was a dog that went about blind. And another dog came along and said, "You know, I'm going to guide you around." And so the dog that was blind followed the other dog around to the water bowl, to the food bowl, to playing and doing things. And the other dog learned to hear him, learned to sense him, learned to touch him. Now, where did that dog get that sensitivity of humanness, you know, of caring for a dog that was blind? Where did he get the idea? Well, he lived in his ideal self. He lived in his ideal realization of who and what he was. He was demonstrating his divinity. We all can do that. Now, we say, "Isn't that wonderful? Oh, my goodness." Talking to animals and having animals respond. Talking to the sun, the moon, the stars. Talking to the weather and having the weather be harmonious with us. Isn't it wonderful that we can do that? And we can. Why don't we always do it? Why don't we teach that in our schools? Now, in our elementary schools, we don't teach our children how to be members of a family. That's the home job. We don't teach our children how to get along with each other. We teach them working together as children, but we don't teach them specific rules on how to get along with each other and get the most out of each relationship. We don't teach them that. We don't have a school for mothers and fathers who all of a sudden found themselves pregnant. Now, They were born in families, but were their families the ideal family? Or were their families just a normal family? Why don't we have a school that teaches parents how to raise children? And not how to raise them like Dr. Spock would say, but how to really raise them. How, when a parent is super loving with a child, with himself and trusting themselves and believing in themselves, master of themselves, the children will emulate this and demonstrate this. Generally speaking, children love their parents very much. Children love their mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and family because that's all they know. They are not in another family. They are not in somebody else's. They're in their home occasionally, but the people put on their nice side when the visiting neighbor or children come in. But why don't we teach in our schools how to be a loving parent? How to be the ideal parent? And the ideal parent is far off the limb from what we think it should be. The ideal parent looks for their children and calls them geniuses. The ideal parent looks for their children and calls them good, even when they're making mistakes. The ideal parent looks for their children and finds in them the beauty and the goodness and the wholeness and the magic that they are. And doing this, the parent is being divine. The parent is ready for the school of the master. They're ready to make that giant leap from a human to a divine being. Now, many children think that their parents are God. They think that their parents are the best. Their parents can make no mistakes. And many parents seek to live up to what the children expect of them. Not always successfully, but they seek to do it. And as they seek to do it, what are they doing? They are living to their finest and best. If every parent could teach their children to be themselves and have fun, the kids say, oh good, I can go do anything I like. That's right. What is it that you like? Well, I like to break windows. Well, that's not acceptable. That's not acceptable in our society. Do you want someone else to do that to you? To go and mess up your property, things that you own, your bike, to run over it with a car? No, no, no. Well, we always respect our property and everybody else's. We are honorable. We are good. And when parents begin to teach their children these things, what happens to the children? The children begin to be most marvelous children, most wonderful children, but only because the parents learned how to like themselves. They went to school, and they learned how to be nice to themselves. They learned to live inside of themselves, to find their inner path. Now, are we living here on this earth to create computers? Are we living on this earth to go out and have a job, whether we like it or not, to earn money, to buy things that we don't need? Are we living on this earth to raise children? Does every man and woman who get together, must they have children? Everyone said, oh, you're not pregnant yet? You know, when are you going to have your children? You wait too long, you know, and it's going to be tougher and stuff like that. And they don't intend to. They just enjoy each other's company. As a man and a woman, they enjoy going places and being free and doing things. And children would limit them from doing it. To them, having children was not as important as to other people to having children. So a master leaves that humanness behind. And sometimes a master doesn't need these things. Of the masters that you think about, not that you know about, but of the masters that you think about, how many of them have families? How many are born on a lotus blossom, so to speak? How many are strange and not really into our society, not really into it. And yet society goes to them for wisdom and understanding. But they have chosen to walk their own path. They have chosen to do those things that delight them and make them happy. And that's what, for them, is the most important thing. Think about that. Think about how that affects you and how you are going to live your life as you leave the human behind. Live a revealed life. This is the delight of each participant in the school of the Master. What is a revealed life? A revealed life is a life that is right now, absolutely complete. A revealed life is life that has no problems. It only has solutions. You think, yeah, wouldn't it be fun having a brand new car? And then, can you manifest it in your consciousness? Can you manifest it with your money? Can you manifest it out of the allness? Are there brand new cars around? How do you get a brand new car in your consciousness? You see yourself having it. That's the rule of being a master. He sees himself complete. He sees himself having the new car. He sees himself having the house that he wants to live in. He doesn't see himself owning it. He doesn't see himself possessing it. He doesn't see himself maintaining it. He doesn't see himself taking care of it in any way. He doesn't see himself mowing the lawn. Maybe he does because he likes to do it. But he doesn't see any responsibility in having a house. He doesn't see any responsibility in having a car. He doesn't see any responsibility in having a wife or a husband. He doesn't see any responsibility in having children. He doesn't see any responsibility in teaching school. Now, maybe he's a school teacher. How does he teach school without responsibility? What does he do when he goes to school and teaches? What does he say to the people in his class? He teaches them, if he does as a master, he teaches them that they already know within them the answer to any question that they might ever want to ask. So he teaches them how to tune in to that illumination within himself right now. He teaches them how to tune in. Now, teaching them how to tune in is a difficult situation at times. And it's difficult only because the people want to do it their way. Now, I say to you, any of you, do you want a car? Oh, I got a car, but a nice new car would be wonderful. What kind of car do you want? Oh, I can afford. Okay. Now, what kind of car do you visualize yourself in? Oh, I visualize myself in a Volkswagen, or I visualize myself in a Ford, or I visualize myself in a Cadillac. What do you visualize yourself in? Why do you visualize yourself in, let's say, a Cadillac? Oh, because I like nice cars. I like a Cadillac. Well, what kind? Do you want a naked Cadillac or a full Cadillac? Oh, well, the only kind of Cadillac to have is a full Cadillac with air conditioning, with seats that warm themselves. They tilt back and forth. You press a button for you, and you have other buttons for your wife or your husband and for your children, and each one gets in the car and presses their button and sits in their seat, and their seat is immediately positioned to their comfort. Now, you press another button, and the button says, okay, this is Herb getting in the car. Okay? The seat adjusts for Herb, the driver's seat. Okay? The mirrors adjust for Herb sitting in the driver's seat at that point. Now, this is all pre-laid out by me because I have programmed it that way. And then I like a temperature in the car about 72 maybe. So that's a good temperature. So then I set the temperature. I don't set the air conditioner, I set the temperature. Because if it needs to be warm, it'll be heating. If it needs cool, it'll cool it. But that's the temperature. And it's not all of a sudden going to change. And then I would like to have my cup of coffee next to me. And I have it on a little placer that keeps it warm and nice. And I have my GPS, and it sets it out. And then I press a button, and I say, I'm going to Campo. And so the GPS goes, and then I sit there, when I drink my coffee, and the car drives to Campo. And as it drives, it comes to the stop signs and stops. It sees what the other cars are doing on the road and drives accordingly. And everything goes just perfect. Now, you say, well, now that's going to cost a pretty penny. That's going to cost a few dollars. It is. What is that to you? Jesus said to his followers, what's that to thee? Follow thou me. Don't you know, thinking in limitation, think in the abundance of the universe. Tune in to it. Now, where did the Cadillac come from that had all those accoutrements to it? It came out of our consciousness. Where did it come from? It came out of somebody else's consciousness. Why is it that we don't have it? Because we're not claiming it and naming it for ourselves. You mean to say that's all it takes? We just name it and claim it, and then we have it? That's right. We name it and claim it. Now, let's just say we want to be a master leaving our humanness behind. And we want to live in that delight. Nothing else matters. What do? We go to the school of the master, and the schoolhouse is empty. We go to the school of the master, the building is empty. All the doors are unlocked, and we go into one school, is a computer room, and we sit down, and all of a sudden, we instantly know all about computer science. We go into some other area, and we instantly know. Now, Star Trek had a room that people would go to if they wanted to get an education in anything. And they put this on their forehead, something, two little buttons, and then they'd press geography or mathematics or a four-year college education. And within an instant, they had the entire education. Now, how did they do that? Now, that's fiction, so we have it at the moment. But it's not really fiction. They did not have information from the outside put into them. They had the key which unlocked it on the inside of the knowledge that was already there. They had that key that opened up the reservoir of all knowledge within them, and that all knowledge was revealed to them. They already had it. They merely recognized that they had it. And they didn't recognize that they had it. They merely spoke of whatever it was they wanted, and they had it. They spoke of language, and they knew it. They spoke of math, and they knew it. They spoke of geography, and they knew it. They knew all those wonderful things. How did they know it? How did they know all these things? Well, in the school of the master, the student is the teacher. The student is the teacher because the student already knows all. And the student is training itself to be tuned in to itself, to be itself and have fun doing it. And in being itself and having fun doing it, all the doorways, all the wisdom, all the genius of the universe is revealed to them. And it's revealed to them quite easily. It's revealed to them quite perfectly. It's revealed to them without flaw. Now, you think you're going to do some mathematical problem, and you're going to use algebra and trigonometry and geometry and all that stuff. And so you sit down and you do your geometric problem there, and you know all the way. You don't have to go through the schedule on doing it. One young man was listening as I was telling his father, who is training to be a stockbroker, on how to do it. And I told the father, you just say, I know that I know that I know, and you'll know. So the father took the stockbroker's test and passed it. And then the son took his algebra test. And to that point, he had been failing in algebra. But at that moment, he got 100%. Well, the teacher called the father and said he cheated because he had 100%. He couldn't change overnight from a failure to a 100% student. And the father says, well, she didn't say, I know that I know. He said, just, and the principal came in at the same time, said, let the boy do the test again. But now when you do the test, you write down how you got to your answer and write it down completely. And the boy wrote it down completely. And he answered it another 100%. Because he said, I know that I know, flippantly, as a child would do. And it functioned for him. A master leaves the human, and in the school of the master, the student is the teacher. And this is who you are. You are your own teacher. You already know everything. So, enjoy. It's yours. Free. I love you.